Chapter 7 Imperator Turov wasn't always the easiest officer to talk to. First off, she liked to put barriers in a man's way. Secondly, she was always busy doing something important, or at least something that seemed important. Today was no exception to either of these rules. There were no less than 3 adjuncts and a couple of centurions that I had to go through to meet up with Turov. The high and mighty one herself didn't have time for a lowly non-com, I was told this repeatedly. Insisting I had something to say that only Turov herself was qualified to listen to got me pretty far, but that was only because they knew I'd had unusual dealings with her in the past. Eventually, I was faced with a final adjunct, a woman named Bakchan. She had an attitude as snotty as the rest of them. I told her my story all over again, concluding that Turov wouldn't like it if an adjunct turned me back. At last, she led me to a well-appointed office door. It wasn't the same office where I'd met up with Turov in the past, but I figured maybe she'd moved. The lock buzzed open even before my fist rapped on the door. It melted away from my hand as I pushed it open. Stepping inside, I was met with another unpleasant surprise. I was standing in Winslade's office, not Turov's. He was sitting behind his desk with his non-reg jack boots resting between a monitor and a cup of coffee. Working on a computer scroll, he waved at me with a skinny set of fingers, indicating I should approach but remain standing. I did so, but after a moment I couldn't take the waiting around. "Sir? Primus, sir, I'm sorry. I must have been led to the wrong office. I'll be going now. Didn't mean to bother you." Winslade glanced up and gave me an unhappy stare.
"You're in the right place, McGill," he said. "That is, if it can be said that there is a right place for the likes of you."
"I don't understand, sir." He set the scroll aside and removed his feet from the desk. Weaving together his fingers like a spider web, he leaned forward and gave me an unfriendly appraisal. I could tell I was a bug on a dinner plate to him.
"Let me spell it out for you," he began. "I'm in command of your cohort. In truth, even I'm too far up the chain of command to be talking to the likes of a freshly promoted veteran, and the Imperator is 2 steps above my station. The idea that you should be allowed to waltz in here and meet with her in person on demand, it's preposterous, and it's going to stop today. If you have something to say to the Imperator, you'll tell me first. If I find it worthy, I may kick it up another level, but I'll warn you right now that's highly unlikely." Winslade had my attention now. I knew he didn't like me, and he didn't enjoy it when I went over his head and talked to Turov, but this wasn't about protocol or personal dislike. He wanted to know what I was up to. He didn't want to be cut out of the loop, as had happened in the past.
"I heard you, Primus, loud and clear. I'll be going now."
I spun on my heel and managed to take 2 long strides across his thick carpet toward the door before he reacted.
"Halt! You haven't been dismissed, veteran."
Stopping, I spun back around, but I still didn't say anything. I stood at attention and looked at the wall.
"Tell me why you wanted to talk to the Imperator," he prompted.
"Because I think she's making a strategic error, sir." A frown grew on his face. It was a wary look of displeasure.
"You've always believed you know better than your commanders how to run our legions, haven't you?"
"Not at all, sir. But sometimes people don't have a clear view. They don't have the vision of the man in the trenches."
"Interesting. Let me see if I can interpret your vague hints. You've uncovered a scheme of some kind. You believe the Imperator should be given this information in person, as it may affect her decisions regarding our current mission."
I gave him a startled glance. I didn't have any such information. I was planning on trying to convince her not to give up on finding the raiders too easily, that was all. But as usual, Winslade, with his conniving personality, thought I was holding back something more sinister.
"Aha!" Winslade cried, banging a skinny fist on his desk. "I've got your attention now, don't I? Yes, McGill, even I can follow your clever machinations. Well, I'll have none of it. I don't want you pestering, Turov. I've given the staff orders to intercede if you try. As you can see, they've been quite effective today.
Nodding and looking back at the wall, I paused for a second. Am I dismissed then, sir?
No, you're not dismissed.
He studied me quietly for a few seconds. He was obviously waiting for me to volunteer information. I endeavored to make my face a blank mask and said nothing.
Damn you, man, he said at last. You're not getting out of here without telling me what this is about. But even if you don't want to talk, your motivations should be vulnerable to logical reasoning. Let's continue extrapolating down this path. If you wanted to tell Turov something crucial, why not send her a text? Can it be because you're well aware all your texts are carefully monitored?
I gave him another startled look. He smiled.
I see you do know. That indicates you want to talk to Turov in person in order to give her a private message. And don't even try to convince me you're simply making another ham-handed romantic overture. I know that you've been far from lonely at night.
This entire discussion was getting off track in an alarming way. Winslade seemed to have gone paranoid, reading my texts, having people provide him with reports on my dating life. The man was losing it.
Sir, I'm in the dark about all that, I said, honestly. I'm just trying to help our commander achieve her goals. If you stand between me and the Imperator, well, that's your business, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Winslade was suddenly pissed again. He stood up and began to pace. He clasped his arms behind his back oddly, with one hand grabbing the elbow of the other.
Threats! You dare so much! You think you still have her ear and her eye, don't you? All right, McGill. You can go to the Imperator and give her your dirty little report. But don't think I'm not watching. Don't think I'll allow you to keep rank climbing and undermining my position year after year. I have real rank, and I have a growing record in the field. On top of that, let's not forget I'm still in your chain of command. I can make things unpleasant for you.
Of course, sir. I must say it's been a pleasure to serve. Can I be on my way now?
Get out.
I'd been thrown out of any number of offices, so I knew the routine. I left without saying anything more. I didn't even glance back to see what he was doing. When the door squeezed shut behind me, I met up with the sneering adjunct Bakchan. She'd evidently been waiting for me.
I'll take you back to your module, veteran, Bakchan said. This way, please.
You might want to check with Primus Winslade on that point first. Frowning, she looked at her tapper, which beeped and displayed fresh orders. She looked up at me a moment later, startled.
I'm to take you to the Imperator?
Yes, as I originally requested. Adjunct Bakchan didn't say another word as she marched me down a passage or two. We wound up in front of a pair of imposing doors. She looked more worried than annoyed now. When Turov was involved directly, she knew enough to stay quiet and keep her head low. The office doors that led to Turov's office were impressive indeed. They weren't like any I'd seen on a dreadnought before. Ornately carved with dark alien hardwoods, they depicted the heads of what looked like a species of bird that had been crossed with a demon. I stepped inside, and the first thing I noticed was the carpet. It wasn't your typical military-grade weatherproof stuff. It was sumptuous, red, rich. It felt like I was walking on velvet.
What do you think of my new office, McGill?
Asked a voice I recognized. I looked for Turov, but I didn't see her right off. There were hanging curtains, folding glass barriers, and a variety of other decorations all over the place.
Wow, I said. This is really something, sir.
Imperator Galina Turov became visible then. Sort of. She was lurking behind a semi-opaque pane of glass. I couldn't help but stare as her lithe form was displayed in stark silhouette. What's more, it looked to me like she was walking around nude back there.
She seemed to be toweling off her hair like she'd just come out of the shower. It took me a long second, but I finally realized this personal display couldn't be an accident. No one put a light bulb behind their shower curtain and stood between the two without a damned good reason. "Sir?" I asked. "Should I come back another time?"
"Will your visits be any less annoying if it is postponed?"
"I'm not sure I can promise that."
"Then let's get this over with. Take a seat, James."
James. She usually didn't call me that. She only did so, in fact, when she was in an amorous mood or drunk. You have to understand that I'd had an inappropriate relationship with the Imperator some years back. Most people, especially Winslade, still considered my familiarity with her to be improper. She came out of her inner sanctum a moment later with her hair still hanging limp and wet. She had clothes on, but they didn't amount to a regulation uniform. She wore something like a sleeping jumper with rank insignia on the epaulets. It was the sort of thing officers wore to bed, but as usual, it was tighter than it was supposed to be. Smart clothes could be told to cinch up if you wanted them to. "Is this your off-duty shift, sir?" I asked.
"Unfortunately, high-level officers are never truly off-duty. Your visit is a clear exemplification of that reality. Now, before you waste any more of my time, get to the point. Why are you working so hard to see me in person?"
"Because I think you're making a mistake. I think you should check out all three of the systems where our enemy might have taken refuge as we originally planned."
"The raiders, of course. James, I know of your personal loss in this tragedy. I, too, would like to hold the raiders accountable. But I have to be honest with you. We've lost them."
I blinked at her in surprise. "That's not how I understand the situation."
"We had one chance, really. That first stop. After that, the odds that we're still following the right course have grown very long indeed."
"But the text did the math," I objected. "This heading should match that of the raiders. They have to come out eventually."
"Let's assume you're correct,"
she said, toweling off her hair while I watched.
"We may have been going in the right direction initially, but we must admit to certain realities. Any raider with a modicum of intelligence should have used the last few weeks to come out of warp, switch courses, and fly in another direction. They could have done that a week ago, for example, and we would never have known, as we were in a warp bubble ourselves and thus blinded. They could be doing it right now, in fact, and again, we'd never know."
"I understand that, but a ship's crew will normally take a straight path toward their destination while fleeing. We had three target stars they might have been trying to..."
"Not really. We never had three targets. That first one held promise. The odds were high, we'd catch them there. But now the probability is slim. It's simple mathematics. We drew a line following their initial path as best we could, but our measurements couldn't be exact. Therefore, each light year we fly from the original starting point creates a cone of space, not a line, containing places they might stop. We're reaching the wide end of that cone, and there are a great number of destinations within it, so as I explained, that first binary system was our only real hope."
I felt a wave of frustration. She might be right, and in fact I sensed that at least she believed she was, but I didn't want to give up, not yet. "You're talking about the margin of error," I said, "about probabilities. Well, if it's hopeless, why aren't we abandoning the hunt right now? Why not simply turn around and go home today?"
"Politics and public relations forbid it,"
she said, setting aside her towel and walking languidly around her desk to my side of it. She put her butt up against the edge of the desktop and leaned back, resting her hands on the desk.
"We must make it seem we've searched everywhere to satisfy the angry mob back home. We're going to return empty-handed in the end, and it would be best that we take our time before we admit failure.
Look, I said, Imperator, we have a lot of secrets between us and quite a colorful past.
You think I'm going to listen to threats? She demanded, interrupting. Really, McGill? I hadn't thought you were so deluded as to think you could damage me at this point. I know about your little talk with Nagata. Don't think I'll be taken unaware.
Internally, I was shocked, but I didn't show it. Equestrian Nagata had charged me with feeding him information on Turov. He wanted her taken out of the upper brass, presumably because she was after his job. I'm not making any threats, I said carefully. I'm asking for a favor.
A favor? What gives you the right to ask for such a thing?
We owe each other a great deal. All I'm asking for this time around is a break. If you're going to stop searching after one more star anyway, make it the one we're passing by now. You said yourself the probability they'll switch course on us is growing every day. This binary system is inside the cone where they might make that move. Let's not skip it.
That would make you happy?
I wouldn't say that. I'm only going to be happy if we find them.
That, I believe, she said, looking up at me thoughtfully. What's in this arrangement for me?
I tried hard to think of something, but initially I drew a blank. You mentioned Nagata, I said at last. Maybe I could keep you informed on his actions instead of the other way around. This made her eyebrows rise high. She nodded appreciatively, taking her butt off her desk and approaching me.
I like the sound of that, she said. The best agents are double agents. You'll do that for me? Risk everything to feed me information about the witch hunt my enemies are engaged in back at Central?
If it will make you stop this ship, then yes. She turned away as if considering her options. My eyes wandered, as I was sure she knew they would. They fixated upon her hindquarters almost immediately, which were tightly packed into her thin jumper. She glanced over her shoulder and caught me looking. She smiled.
I accept your offer, James. You will make regular visits to my office. You'll report 3 times a week, every other day. Do you understand?
I said, looking down at her face and trying not to look even farther down. Not entirely. What am I going to report on? Nagata is back on Earth. She rolled her eyes and sighed. She reached back, grabbed my hand, and put it on her rump.
Are we clear now?
She asked. Oh, yes, sir. I was surprised, but I got over that very quickly. I stepped forward and began pawing at her. She leaned over her desk, and I removed what she had on, which didn't amount to much more than an ounce of sheer smart cloth anyway. We made love, then, right on her desk. I really hoped she had good soundproofing installed on her office walls, because she wasn't quiet about it. One more thing, sir, I said when we were finished. Can I call you Galena? She thought about it for a moment, frowning.
No, I'd prefer you didn't.
Very well, sir. I left after that, and I have to confess, I was smiling. One could say I'd been abused by my superior, sexually coerced even. But then again, one could say that I didn't mind the abuse. Not one bit.